This program is brought to you by the Genesis Communications Network, a world leader in talk radio since 1998. Visit GCNlive.com today.
Our Matrix server is about as free as internet chat can be. Join the existing rooms or create your own at chat.freetalklive.com.
Second hour here of this live Saturday episode. The phones are open if you want to join us. The number is 603-283-6160. That's 603-283-6160. We have been talking about the Greater Idaho Movement, a movement of people in eastern Oregon that would like to no longer be part of Oregon.
Can we just call it the more mediocre Idaho Movement?
Having never been there, I can't really make a call on what part of it would be more mediocre, but the people in Oregon are about sick and tired, at least the eastern Oregon folks, sick and tired of being part of that political designation, and they'd rather be with a more conservative, in their minds, political designation. Personally, I don't want to be in either place.
They could rename it Conservaho.
They might. I mean, I don't know what they're going to do over there. But right now, what they have to do first is get out of Oregon. And the thing is, they don't want to physically move. You know, they've got farms and they've got families and people are dug in where they are. They got businesses, and even though they could just hop across the border and have a better lifestyle or whatever, more conservative life in Idaho, they'd rather rally the troops. Vote, as apparently 12 counties have now done in eastern Oregon, to not leave, per se, but ask their county delegates, or whatever they're called, to have a discussion about what it would take to say goodbye to Oregon politically and join Idaho. If you want to comment on that, you're welcome to join us. Major Payne is on the line. You can also bring up anything you want.
But
Major Payne, you're on Free Talk Live, calling from Michigan. Michigan, go ahead.
Yeah, if you guys get this any kind of close to fruition, the Democratic Party is going to fight it tooth and nail.
Why?
I said the Democratic Party will fight this.
I heard what you said. Why would they do that?
Because of Libertaria. They control all the populace along the coast. Therefore, they control the whole state. They don't want to lose the electoral college votes. That and the tax base for the states, too, is going to come into play with all this. So
you're saying the National Party will fight it because they'll...
I'm going to come with this.
Sorry, God?
No, I got another political hot potato.
Right, hold on.
So you're saying the National Party will fight this because they don't want to lose the Electoral College votes, even though the state Democrats will probably be all in favor of it.
That's kind of what I'm thinking, but
I don't think
the Democrats in the state are going to be all in favor of it either, because they don't want to lose the tax revenue.
That's what I'm saying. Like, you have to have people to steal tax money from.
Mm.
And so if the people who want to steal most or tax money the most, the left, sort of don't have a whole bunch of people to steal from, where are they going to get their money?
That is a problem.
You'd rather steal from than the people you don't even like on the other side of the mountain.
Right. True, and you could argue that a lot of the people on the right maybe are more likely to have their own businesses, maybe a little more productive.
Oh, the right's just the same, except on the other side. They would also like to control everybody.
They would,
everybody,
but they know they can't.
Preference.
They know they can't win in Oregon. They are outnumbered, outvoted by the people on the left. So, I mean, there is an argument to say that some people on the left would want to keep sucking the blood or the energy, the money out of the people who are on the right, and they wouldn't want them to go away because then they wouldn't be able to live off of them. But on the other hand, you know, it is an annoyance to have to fight constantly over the things that you want to pass at the state level. And if the Republicans are gone from the state house largely, then it will be completely Democrat controlled. There's no chance the Republicans would stand in the way or stop a vote on something and they'd be able to move it forward. I don't know. I think it's interesting.
Yeah, they're similar but distinct motivations here, right? So the left wants to hold on to the people on the right because that's who they're getting their money from.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And the right wants to hold on to the people on the left because that's who they want to order around.
Right.
Like, you know, you'd have people calling in like, no, this is our country and I want to be able to tell them what to do. Like, everyone's like, no, this is ours. We need to take it back. And what they really mean is, I want to be able to tell these people to stop doing these things that they want to do.
Yep. Whether it be gay married, mm-hmm. or smoke marijuana.
Exactly.
Or whatever that is.
That's exactly it. So even though, you know, they're the ones who have the money, they have this desire to tell these people in the cities, mostly, what to do with their lives. Not to get gay married, not to do all these drugs, and we will kidnap you if you do. And on the other hand, the people who are running the cities, they realize that they don't have any productivity there.
The fundamental lesson here for those people listening or maybe new to this show is that humankind needs to get over the desire to tell other humans what to do. You don't get that right.
Well, I mean,
to steal their stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. Obviously, these are people who haven't per se gotten over that, but at least the people in the greater Idaho movement have gotten over the idea that they can, you know, they're not going to be able to do it in Oregon, at least.
Right.
They've given up. They say, you know what, it would make more sense if we could just live somewhere around more people that are like us. Wait,
if Idaho gets greater, does that mean we get more and better potatoes?
Perhaps. What else, Major?
Well, evidently there's a congresswoman down from Georgia, and she started impeachment proceedings against Biden. Biden.
Sure, go nowhere.
For what?
His handling of the Mexican border debacle.
Yeah, impeachment.
What does that even mean?
What was his handling of the Mexican border?
He's done the exact same thing that Trump did.
I don't know what he did wrong. This was just a quick news blip I heard.
It's just a conservative talking point. I mean, that's... I'm sure you're talking about Marjorie Taylor Greene. She's the Georgia rep that everybody talks about.
Right, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, she's just she's an ultra-right Trump-supporting person.
It's just political circuses.
That's all it is. I mean, Biden has been cracking down on immigration just like Trump did, okay? Mm-hmm. They continue to separate children from families. They continue to send peaceful people back into to Mexico who could help us here by working hard, bringing prices down, by working hard and all that. And there's been no change that Joe Biden has brought into play.
And I think the first president I remember, like as a small child, was Carter. And, like, I knew nothing about politics and was too young to even, like, comprehend what was going on. And Reagan was next.
Mm.
And I think, including Reagan, I think impeachment was mentioned for every president during my life at some point. Somebody was like, oh, we're going to try and impeach him for that and impeach for that and impeach him. And so, like, it's like crying wolf.
Well, I guess Major is saying she's filed some papers or whatever. So, I mean, maybe that's because the Congress is Republican now.
Well,
so
they are bureaucrats, Ian. They must have forms just laying around.
Well, and I honestly don't care. What I would care about, even knowing that it wouldn't go anywhere, if she filed for, say, you're a war criminal who is violating the Geneva Convention presently, that would be interesting.
But
of course, she can't do that because that might tie the hands of Republican candidates from being war criminals.
Thank you, Major, for the call tonight. Appreciate it. Let's talk to the situation. He is actually calling from Oregon, and I know you were calling about immigration tonight, the situation, but I did ask you off the air if you've been aware of this whole greater Idaho movement. You live in western Oregon, so it may not be something that is too concerning to you, but has there been any buzz at all, you know, amongst friends or coworkers? Are people talking about this that you've heard?
Well, first of all, I want to give out a shout out to my buddy, Ricky from the Commonwealth, the Confederate libertarian.
No, he's not a libertarian.
No.
He calls himself a Confederate Democrat.
That's what I meant. Sorry. Thank you.
The Confederate Democrat.
Tell him hello and love him, and that's awesome.
It's very nice.
We got into
what was it that? But your thoughts on the whole Greater Idaho? Are you hearing anyone talking about that? Is there a discussion amongst friends?
Well,
water cooler talk.
There's I don't know how many counties are in the state. There's well over 30 counties, and the major counties that basically run the state, that get all the votes on the left side, that control everything, the supermajority, are Portland area, Salem, the capital area. I don't know the capital or the county names.
The big cities, right?
Eugene, which are the bigger cities. They run the state.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
And So the rest of the state, the other 30 counties or whatever, the majority of the state is pretty red. And a lot of Espanolas in Oregon. And so they're obviously conservative. And I don't think the Democrat type people or any political party really realizes how conservative the Espanolas are in Oregon.
What is an Espanola?
So, I don't know if they're a part of the.
Are you referring to Spanish speaking individuals?
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, they do tend to have a conservative viewpoint. A lot of migrants are Catholics.
Latinos. You know,
Okay, but it's
part of why it's so strange to see the rallying on the right about the border is because, like, guys, they're Christian and they vote that way.
Yeah, the right just is totally screwing the whole immigration thing up. They could have huge support.
There's a whole other argument with that. The immigration thing. And that's just a side note there. But I mean. You're getting way too many people in here versus the resources we have to support them.
What do you mean too many people? I mean, the story we were just reading about Eastern Oregon says there's one person per square mile on average.
I kind of traveled off to the border issue on that. I'm just saying
What do you mean there's too many people?
Take that big of an influx at the border.
What are you talking about? There's hardly anybody down there. There's hardly anyone in the western United States. I mean, it's mostly unpopulated, with the exception of the cities.
Because it's desert and there's no water.
That didn't stop Las Vegas.
You might want to travel to the border communities and see what's actually going on.
We've actually had Sheriff David Hathaway call in from Santa Cruz County, Arizona. He's a border sheriff, and he's lived there his whole life. And he's told us what's going on.
Is that the only one you've talked to?
He's the only one who actually understands human liberties, so yeah, I'm not going to waste my time with anyone else.
Human liberties as well, but I'm just saying, if that's your only resource, you need to go down there and check it out, because I've been there, and it's a pretty rough deal.
What's rough about it?
Anyway, what's that?
What do you mean it's a rough deal? What does that mean?
You have people coming across the border with nowhere to go, nothing to do.
Well, if they actually have nothing to do, then they'll probably go back home, but...
That's my entire 20s, but...
My understanding of people coming here is usually they're looking to work, and from what I've seen, there's a lot of people hiring, at least around here. They come on up here, they could, you know, as long as there weren't these stupid government rules standing in the way about hiring people from down south, they'd get a job in no time, because these are people who largely are willing to work. They do want to work, because they want to send money back home to their loved ones in Mexico or wherever, Guatemala. Yeah,
if you want to solve the problem of a bunch of people with nothing to do, get them jobs. But they are not allowed to have jobs in this country because they don't have their paperwork in order.
And we're giving them health care and snippets of money.
I'm not giving them health care.
Yeah, we are. We're paying clinical. Yeah,
well,
we are.
I mean, there is actually an argument that you yourself are giving them health care. That health care is being paid for by money printing, and you use the money. So,
So what it sounds like, as usual, with people on the right, with their discussions about immigration, is you're upset about welfare. And
I heard you talking earlier about the welfare thing and me being kind of conservative. Mm-hmm. I'm pro if you're going to be on welfare, you need to, here's your 6 months or a year, and then you need to get off of it. And if you can pay it back, that'd be great.
But what I'm hearing from you, maybe I misunderstood you. It sounded to me like your concern is with people coming here that they are getting health care. And that to me is a welfare program, which is something that the government is doing. They're forcibly, you know, making it so you and the rest of us have to pay for other people's health care. Mm-hmm. And that's the objection, right? That's your concern. That's the reason why you don't want people coming here.
No, my objection and concern is that a certain amount of people over a certain amount of people overwhelm a system. If you build a ship, and the ship's designed to carry 1,000 people, right? Of course, America's not a ship. It's a piece of land.
Now, the system you're talking about is the welfare system.
Yes.
Right. Okay. So what's the right. number? What's
so
the
let's
number?
Sink that sucker.
Hang on.
Mm-hmm.
What's the number in Oregon? How many people was the ship of Oregon welfare built to handle? How many people?
I don't know, but it's tipping over here.
Well, how do you know if you don't know how many people it was built to handle? How do you know if it's too many? How do you know when it's overwhelmed?
Well, just keep paying taxes as long as you go to work. You know, I'm still working, so I probably have, I don't know, a couple thousand dollars a month I could pay into the system to keep it afloat.
And this is the thing. You don't know any of this, and you can't know. Like, number one, it's not your job. Number two, you're a single individual. Number three, you're not there on the ground seeing what the situation is. You cannot possibly know what the right way to do all of this stuff is. The way to solve that problem is to have a market in charity so that you have independent charities. Like, look, I get what you're aiming at with the, like, okay, 6 months to a year. Maybe that's too little. Maybe that's too much. Maybe that works here and it doesn't work here. You know how we solve that problem? We have a market so that people that know the individual circumstances there, that are motivated to do the most good for the least cost, actually solve the problem instead of us trying to do a one-size-fits-all solution from 100 miles away.
Bam. Mic drop.
I'm trying to say we don't have that solution right now. I'm trying to say that you have...
But you would support that?
Without... a system to take care of them.
Okay, but the situation, I just want to clarify, would you support the quote-unquote system, if you want to call it that, or the lack thereof, the market-based system that Peakless Mountaineer
totally.
Was just discussing?
Totally.
Okay, you would support that. All right, so in the event that we could actually do that, get rid of the government welfare program and have charities, churches, individuals, they're the ones who are helping out. They're the ones who are voluntarily providing health care or housing or food or whatever it is that people in need need. Then you'd be fine with people coming into the country, right?
Totally, totally. Okay. But you're
that's awesome.
You're boating the ship before you have ballast and bilge pumps or any equipment to handle what's going on right now. I mean, from what I understand, I don't know for sure. But the way I was educated, we allowed 1 million people in the country. The U.S. government permitted 1 million immigrants a year.
And it's the same problem. It's the same problem. Like, is that too many? Is that too few? You cannot know that from Washington. You can't know if that's too many. You can't know if that's too few. What you can do, if you've got a market in these things, then you can have people make those decisions independently, and you can follow principles. Like the principle of, hey, we want workers over here. Okay. Well, then you can have workers over there. Hey, we don't want people moving in from south of the border here. Okay, then you can deny those people rent because they come from Mexico. You have to allow these things to happen, and then we can have an adaptive system, find out maybe 1 million is too few. Maybe it's too many. Let's find out, because the idea of, like, there's this ship, and if you just load it with too many people, it'll sink. I mean, you're assuming it, your analogy assumes your conclusion going in. Now, what you have is a really, really complicated system in which we don't know how many, you know, how many people can fit on this ship, because it wasn't designed for a specific number of people, and it's an organism.
Well, here's the other thing. And thank you for this situation for the call. If the system fails, if there are too many people that come into it or whatever, the good news is the charities will pick up the slack.
Yeah.
If there's people who are not getting taken care of by the system and it completely breaks or whatever, the good news is there's still people who care about other people. There's still people running a food bank over here. There's still people running a private homeless shelter over here. I'm talking about where we live.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of these things in a lot of places. People will step up and they will help their neighbors.
Everything that resembles any kind of a welfare program put on by government can and should be a GoFundMe.
Yeah.
Yeah, but they kind of suck. I
mean, okay, but I'm just saying that, like, you can crowdsource this stuff easily and get help directly to the people who need it, get it to them better, get it to them quicker than you can by relying on the behemoth, the slow-moving ox, the elephant, if you will, known as government.
Let's go to this caller. You're on Free Talk Live. What's your name?
Hey, Matthew.
Matthew, you're on the air.
Hey, I'm just calling because I think that the immigration debate kind of gets clouded because what people get frustrated with are the benefits. And so what you have is that the people that are coming here now are claiming asylum, which is different than migration. So with asylum, the federal government will provide you with housing assistance and a whole host of benefits that normal migrants don't get. And so what you have is these large groups of people that are migrating across the border to claim asylum to get the benefits that come with that. You can see it most prominently in Maine, mostly with people from Western Africa, where there are towns that are maxed out because the federal government basically comes in and buys out hotels to house the people that are claiming asylum status when migration is what would be more beneficial, because then you wouldn't have all that trail of benefits that comes with that asylum status.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I get where you're coming from. Unfortunately, you know, the federal government still exists, and while they exist, they will likely continue to offer asylum status, which is a protection, right? So these are people who ostensibly are being persecuted in some way, shape, or form where they're coming from, and sort of like Edward Snowden, you know, he applied for asylum in Russia,
right?
As I understand it, to protect him from the United States government, and these are people who are doing the same thing. I mean, I don't necessarily think that everyone who needs asylum would necessarily need to have a bunch of handouts. I do find myself wondering what portion of the people who claim asylum are able to work and are willing to work versus those who are taking the handouts. Do you have any idea?
Yeah, well, so the thing is that if you say the right words, you can qualify as an asylee. And mm-hmm. So basically, you say, like, I can't be in my home country because I'm being persecuted for, usually for Central America, it's usually gangs. So they say, like, I can't stay there because the gangs are threatening my family. And then once you have that hook in, you qualify for the benefits that come with the asylee status. And I think that the thing that what we could fix this with was to go back to Mark's blue card, where basically, like, you can come here and do whatever you want as long as you promise to never take any benefits. And I think that would quiet a lot of the people like the situation.
Can I claim asylum from my own government?
No, unfortunately not. You have to go physically somewhere else.
You have to leave and go somewhere else.
Yeah, there's this one ever-present gang everywhere I go. It's called the state.
Yeah,
and it seems to target me all of the time.
It sucks, too, because when you go to another place, you are then there as their guest, essentially. And so, like, in Russia, you better believe Edward Snowden's keeping his mouth shut about what Putin is doing to people over there and the tyranny they have to deal with.
And I think they'd still complain because they were receiving health care in emergency rooms.
What gets me about the benefits argument for, you know, asylum seekers or migrants is that, it's the cost. It's the cost. They're overwhelming the system. Well, look at the cost of war. That's a far larger number.
Right.
Hey, thank you, Matt, for the call tonight. I appreciate it. It would be nice if somebody was proposing the idea at the federal level that he's talking about. But no, they just want to crack down. More coming up.
Are you curious about what might be missing from your diet and supplement choices? Take a free health assessment to identify your possible nutrient deficiencies. As a certified holistic health coach, I will help you assess and prioritize a supplement program based on Dr. Wallach's recommendations. Call Linda at 833-VITAL-90. That number to call is 833-848-2590. That's 833-VITAL-90.
Are you a business owner? Are you confused by the complexity of the tax laws? We can help. I'm Dan Pilla, and I've been helping business owners solve tax problems for over 40 years. My book, The Small Business Tax Guide, shows proven ways to avoid all the common business tax problems. Don't risk your business. Go to danpilla.com to order your copy. That's danpilla.com. Order now and get a free 15-minute call directly with me, a $99 value. Go to danpilla.com. That's danpilla.com.
USA News Update. President Biden says he believes the U.S. will avoid a default on its national debt. Speaking to reporters at the G7 summit in Hiroshima today, Biden says he's confident a deal can be reached on raising the debt ceiling. The Kremlin is issuing a warning to Western countries over a plan to send F-16 fighter jets to Ukraine. Russia's deputy foreign minister said the plan involves enormous risks for those involved. Called it an escalation of the conflict and noted Moscow will take the move into account. Texas Governor Greg Abbott is referring to Brownsville as ground zero for illegal border crossings. Abbott praised the Texas National Guard and noted they are holding the line against the ongoing border surge. National Treasure is the winner of the 148th Preakness Stakes at Pimlico Racecourse in Baltimore. Kentucky Derby winner Mage came in third. Jerry Barmash, USA News.
Get healthy, not high, with 100% pure CBD powerful natural pain relief from Veterans Vitality. GCN listeners, have you ever thought about how CBD may help you? I'm sure you have heard about the many benefits of CBD. Well, here's your opportunity to try before you buy. Created by veterans and for everyone who deserves better choices, our CBD is derived from organic hemp, grown in the USA, and third-party tested. Veterans Vitality CBD saves you as much as 25 to 50% over our competition, and a portion of all sales is contributed to veteran nonprofits and events. Many of our customers have experienced improved quality of life, help with anxiety, PTSD, and overall well-being. Our products do not contain THC. They are safe, non-addictive, effective, and 100% legal. GCN listeners, get your free trial bottle of premium CBD by simply paying shipping and handling at GCNFreeCBD.com. That's GCNFreeCBD.com. Again, GCNFreeCBD.com. Offered by Veterans Vitality Premium CBD.
Tejibo Tea Club's original Pure Pouty Arco Super Tea helps build red corpuscles in the blood, which carry oxygen to our organs and cells. Our organs and cells need oxygen to regenerate themselves. The immune system needs oxygen to develop, and cancer dies in oxygen. So the tea is great for healthy people because it helps build the immune system, and it can truly be miraculous for someone fighting a potentially life-threatening disease due to an infection, diabetes, or cancer. The tea is also organic and naturally caffeine-free. A one-pound package of tea is $49.95, which includes shipping. To order, please visit shopsupertea.com. The first word is shop, spelled S-H-O-P, then the word super, and then the word tea. The complete website is shopsupertea.com, or call us at 818-984-6100 Monday through Saturday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. California time. That's 818-984-6100. ShopSuperT.com.
We still do email. Drop your email address in the entry box at freetalklive.com, and you'll be kept in the loop with Free Talk Live.
It's Free Talk Live. You can join us here, whatever you want. The number is 603-283-6160. Phone lines are loaded up right now, so you might be getting a busy signal if you're calling. Stand by until you hear somebody drop off the line. We do still have the SIP line available, the super important person line. Wasn't it one of you guys that came up with that?
Yeah.
That's a good one. It is an internet method of calling into the show. It actually is really useful, especially if you're outside of the United States. You can call in for zero cost. Go to sip.freetalklive.com. Anyone can do this. As long as you have a semi-decent internet connection, you'll sound better, likely, than if you're just calling in on the phones. And almost no one ever uses that line, so it's really easy to get through if you call the SIP line. But you do need to follow the instructions to get it working.
Great.
It just takes a few minutes to get it set up. Go to sip.freetalklive.com. And I want to make sure you know that this hour of Free Talk Live is brought to you by Dash Digital Cash. Dash is the cryptocurrency designed to be used for spending. Last year, Dash launched a killer app that allows you to spend Dash at over 155,000 locations across the United States, including major retailers, brands you're familiar with, probably places you already shop. And the killer aspect of this is that not only do you get to spend your Dash, but you get a discount at most of these places for paying with Dash.
So I don't remember which place it was, but the 8% the other day.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Nice.
Now, most of them aren't that high.
No.
You know, you're typically looking at 4 or 5%, somewhere in that range. Sometimes as low as 2 or 3, but there are some that are 8, 9, 7% up there.
Like, wow, that's impressive.
So, and you're a Dash Direct. It's called Dash Direct. And, Catherine, you've been using Dash Direct since before Dash became a sponsor on the show.
This is
something you found on your own, you were very interested in.
Yeah, and it's same here.
You as well.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. One of the things that, like, I am surprised that other cryptocurrencies that are trying to be a means of transaction are not developing the ability for people to transact with their physical businesses.
Right, that's the next logical step of adoption is...
let's make it easy for people to spend it.
Exactly right. And Dash seems to be the only one that's really working on that.
So the way I got to it was I came through. So I used Purse. We advertised that here on
SaveAPurse.com.
I used that a few times, and I really liked it. And it has its place for certain things.
Yeah.
Then I found, I think it's BitRefill and Crypto Refills.
Mm-hmm. These are gift card
websites. Yeah. And it's a little cumbersome to go through it. You really have to want to spend your cryptocurrency to go through these websites. It does work, but, you know, you've got to be sort of an advanced thinker. But with the Dash Direct app, you can just be at a place as long as there's, you know, Wi-Fi or whatever, like a restaurant, for example. And you search it on the app. Yep, it's here. Oh, they take. Okay, sweet. And you just, when you get your bill, you just put in the amount and bam, 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 and it's done.
It's quick.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's amazing, at least my understanding. I've never had the chance
A couple of these restaurant chains have the where they bring you the kiosk at your table to pay.
Right.
And you can actually even include the tip in the final amount that you pay. And they'll have you scan a QR code. To pay for
that's
it.
Handy.
So it's almost, I mean, it's just as easy as paying with like Apple Pay or a credit card.
Except you get a discount with Dash Direct.
But you get a discount, yeah.
Right. The stores, again, they have their own discount level, and that's a cool aspect of it. And they'll show you what they are when you go through the list. Dash is one of the oldest cryptocurrencies. It's widely available on exchanges and in multi-crypto wallets. It's easy to get and use Dash. You can start by learning more at Dash.org. You can get that Dash Direct app, which is different from the Dash wallet, by the way. And I've heard there's discussion about moving them into the same wallet, the same program that may be coming at some point. But for right now, they are separate. It's Dash Direct. Get that at your Apple or Android app store and learn more about Dash at Dash.org. Big thanks to the Dash Decentralized Autonomous Organization for sending us 32 Dash per month to promote Dash on the air here on Free Talk Live. Visit Dash.org to learn about Dash. That's Dash.org.
Thank you, Dad.
We go to the phones here. We got Steve. He's on the line in Vermont. Steve, you're on Free Talk Live. Go ahead.
Hey, how you guys doing?
What's on your mind tonight?
I was just calling because I wanted to see if you guys had any advice on how to mentally prepare to go to jail for 10 years to life. I'm 22 years old, and I committed a nonviolent crime, so I'm looking at 10 to life right now. I won't say what it is, but I'm trying to get advice to see how I can mentally prepare myself and then also deal with being there.
Are we talking about state prison?
Harder.
Is this a state prison thing, federal prison? What are we talking about here?
It's going to be federal prison.
And is this going to be like maximum security? Is it going to be a minimum security camp? I imagine those are going to be important questions.
It's going to be a medium security.
Okay.
Well, having not been to prison, I really don't have much advice. The only thing that I could think of for somebody in that position would be to find a purpose before you go in. Have a thought in mind of like what you want your life to be. Are you going to write a book? Are you going to, you know, what is it that you're going to do? There's something that you can do. Find a purpose while you're in there because that will keep you alive. A man can't live fully unless he has a purpose. And so if you could find one before you go in, have a goal in mind. Okay, well, I'm going to be in. This is what I'm going to spend my time doing. Some prisons will have, like, college classes you can take and all that kind of stuff. So there's all sorts of things you can pursue. But figure out what that is so that you have a goal in mind as you go in. And that way you won't be as affected by, well, of course, being a prisoner.
Yeah, that's kind of where I was going to come from on this. I mean, I've only ever been to jail, which is a whole other story. Prison, as I understand it, is very different. But when I went to jail back in 2011 for civil disobedience, I spent 58 days here in the Cheshire County Spiritual Retreat, as we like to call it.
Yeah.
And I intended to have that be as positive of an experience as I possibly could. And it turned out to be, all things considered, I'd have rather been somewhere else, but it wasn't a bad time. It was, pretty decent, all things considered. So I think having your mindset being positive going into it means you'll probably see more of whatever good side there is there to be seen, if that's what you, kind of meditate on and focus on. What are your thoughts?
I thought that was a great way of framing your experience was as a spiritual retreat.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, it's sort of like it's like being a refugee. You have to go to a completely different country with a completely and fundamentally different culture. So, like, this is a new life for you. And the captain is absolutely correct about, like, having something that is worth doing. So for myself, if I was going to be put in prison, I would probably devote myself to what they call lawfare, because you still have certain legal rights and still have the ability to file suits from within the prison, and they tend to have a remarkable amount of access to, you know, legal libraries because of people who are still fighting their sentencing or making an appeals process. But yeah, it's a completely new life, and it's worth seeing it as such. I will say that, like, psychologically, the way that a human being is set up, if you are exposed to whichever level of existence for a long enough period of time, it becomes your baseline. So you do get used to it, and from
institutionalization,
that, right,
is what they call
right.
it.
And, well, and from that baseline, it really comes down to how you choose to perceive the world. So, like, if you are paying attention to what you don't have that you like, it's going to be a lot more difficult for you. But if you pay attention to, for example, hey, I no longer have to pay a single bill for the rest of my time here. If you no longer pay attention to all of the things that were stressing you out about your ordinary life that no longer exist, if you pay attention to the things that you want to do with your life while you're there, then that can be a much more positive experience for you.
I think, too, that if I were in this situation, that I might lean towards either becoming clergy or becoming what they call it inside prisons, but it would be an inside counselor, right? So you're a counselor to the other inmates, because there are legal things, like you're talking about, Peakless, where if the inmates say something to somebody who is employed by government, then the government has to act on those words, whereas they can say things to another inmate that the other inmate doesn't have to take any action. So you could effectively be a counselor to other people. And again, I don't know your situation exactly or what the situation of this person is that you're talking about, but I'm going to guess that odds are once they go inside, they're going to find somebody else in a worse situation. And so if, you know, you can be of any assistance to them, just being a friend, a comfort, a voice that they could talk to, that kind of a thing, I think that would put you in a better position to survive the ordeal.
Yeah, that's very true. When you focus on making the world around you better,
right,
it does make it easier for, like, you experience a better world while you're trying to make the world better.
Yeah, I mean, you are still going to deal with bureaucracy. There's going to be a lot of it that is not fun or anything like that. But it really is, whether it's an absolutely torturous, hellish experience or a place where you can focus on other things like Peakless was talking about and grow yourself in different ways than you otherwise would have, is really up to you to decide. You can be the prisoner that's there and angry and in despair and pounding on your door day and night and pissing everybody off, or you can be somebody who's there to at least try to connect with people that are there and have a positive an experience.
Find a way to help others and your life will have far more meaning.
Yeah, that's a great point.
And I know that, like Ian, I haven't been to prison, but I have been to jail. And I know that in the time leading up to that, the anxiety that I felt about that change was actually way more than was warranted by the change itself.
Mm.
So right now in this time, it's very easy to be consumed by fear, by anxiety about the upcoming change. But if you just take a deep breath, take a step back, and, like, it's going to be what it's going to be, and accept what is happening to you for what it is, then that gives you a much stronger position to be able to adapt and to plan and to figure out what you're going to do with this change in life experience.
That sounds good. Thanks for the advice.
Hey, thanks for reaching out. Good luck on the sentencing there, man. I hope you get on the lower end.
Thank you.
Appreciate it, man. The number here is 603-283-6160.
I can't even fathom, like, you know,
knowing that was coming.
Yeah, like,
yeah.
I mean, I kind of feel the same way about you with what you're facing.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
yeah, they would love to, prosecutors, I'm sure, would love to have me spend many years behind bars.
Yeah, so. I kind of take it as a given that that is always one of the options because I'm fighting for liberty.
Mm-hmm.
Look, I'm fighting to end the largest gang that the world has ever seen.
Yeah.
I'm fighting to end this entire style of existence that we have this acceptance for one criminal gang in a given geographical area.
Yeah.
So, of course, they're going to target me, and certainly one of the things that is very easily in their arsenal is putting me in prison.
Yeah, make no mistake, all of us sitting here, and even our callers, to that extent, we are taking a risk at talking the way we do, speaking the way we do. We are definitely taking a risk. Why do we take that risk? We don't do it for ourselves. We do it for you.
We go on here. Let's talk. And by the way, just more about the prison thing. There's, I'm sure, many people who have spent time in federal minimum or medium security prisons. I'm sure you can go online and either connect directly with them or read their writings about what, you know, things were like to give you some idea of what to expect. Let's go to Shortwave Surfer calling on our SIP line at sip.freetalklive.com. Hello there.
Oh, hello there.
Welcome, sir. You're on the air.
So, the thing with the prisons and things like that is the governments are just making martyrs out of people.
Yep.
Ross Ulbricht is a martyr, and people still love him and appreciate what he did with the harm reduction of the Silk Road.
Mm-hmm.
You are a martyr, and you are fighting your sentence, and that is a beacon of hope to everybody, okay, at least in my opinion.
Well, thanks.
That's
I appreciate
what I see it.
By the way, Ross Ulbricht is posting to Twitter from inside of the prison, I presume.
Is that actually him? I thought it was relayed somehow.
I presume it's relayed. You're not going to get a Twitter app in
inside
prison. But he's probably calling or emailing
or
something.
Maybe he's got a carrier pigeon that he writes things on, and whoever receives it then tweets it.
He writes a letter to his mom, and his mom posts for him.
It's probably something like that. Yeah, but somebody's posting for him, and... I'll just give you a couple of his, because I know he's in, I don't know if it's Max or whatever, but he's in a pretty serious lockdown. And
he's in federal prison.
Federal prison.
These martyrs, as you call them, really do become sort of a benchmark. Because, you know, Trump can go on there and be like, yeah, I'm going to drain the swamp and freedom and all of that. And it's like, okay, but how did you treat Ross Ulbricht? How did you treat Edward Snowden? Mm-hmm. How did you treat these martyrs?
There's a post here from May 16th, so just a few days ago, that kind of plays into what we were just talking about. Ross says, today I set a strong intention to win the day, and it's been going great. I got up early to meditate before they unlocked the cells. I stayed focused and upbeat. I got a lot done and tied up loose ends that have been nagging at me. Feels good.
Nice.
So it's not easy, especially in a case where, for Ross, there's no light at the end of the tunnel. There's the potential for a commutation at some point, if you can find some president to somehow be persuaded to do that, probably not going to be Joe Biden. But there's no end to his sentence. He has a double life sentence plus 40 years.
So
it can be so easy to let that overwhelm you. And I know at times he has been pretty depressed about that. But here he is, you know, more than a decade into being behind federal prison bars, and he's shifted his perspective. He's trying to stay as positive as he possibly can, and here he is 10 years in saying he's still able to have a good day, quote unquote.
While I'm thinking about it, another resource for our previous caller might be talking to veterans who were POWs who survived being a prisoner of war. Right, and find out what did you do? How did you occupy your time? How did you get by? And, you know, ask a bunch of different people. Somebody will resonate with you. And, you know, you'll get the answers you seek.
And one of the things that I think about with Ross is that, I mean, sure, you have absolutely been struck by your opponent. But you have already, like, the pivotal moment in which he created a marketplace for cryptocurrency has absolutely altered the course of history.
Absolutely.
The fact mm-hmm. that, oh, well, what can you do with Bitcoin? The fact that someone answered, what can you do with Bitcoin? The fact that Ross Ulbricht made this marketplace for this means that this got a chance to live and thrive and will one day take down the very system that is imprisoning him now.
Yeah, most importantly, proving that anarchism in theory can be applied to practice successfully, because cryptocurrency, a.k.a. Bitcoin, is anarchic philosophically and mechanically, and it just works.
By the way, he is at Real Ross U. If you want to follow him on Twitter, that's at Real Ross U. And he's got some really interesting posts. He doesn't post very often, obviously, because you know, he's got to send them to somebody else. Anyway, Shortwave Surfer, what else did you want to share here?
With this, with the welfare state, My personal thought is that welfare can be fine as long as you're not, quote-unquote, wasting it on vices. So my thought is, instead of giving somebody $1,000 a month or whatever, you pay their phone bill, or you pay their mortgage, or you pay their...
Something practical, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, like, I wouldn't want to give, a homeless person cash because they could go spend it on drugs.
Sure.
But if they were hungry, I would absolutely go to the McDonald's or whatever and buy them a burger and bring it to them. Mm-hmm. I would be perfectly fine doing that.
Well, and with that, I think you have to look at the difference in incentive between a private charity and taxes being put toward these welfare programs. Now, with taxes being put toward these welfare programs, they don't care about the actual welfare of the people that they're so-called helping.
Right.
They don't care if you do spend that money on heroin. What difference does that make to them as long as they get their votes, right? Whereas, if you are a charity, then you have to make the determination, like, okay, well, it's going to be this difficult to pay for your rent specifically instead of handing you money, and they can make that calculation and go, okay, yes, well, that increases the probability that this is going to go to the right place by this much, and figure out whether that's worth it in every given circumstance.
Right, like if I'm paying your phone bill for you, then that gives you the chance to have a phone and have phone service, mm-hmm. which then gives you the access to the internet and the ability to get a job, whereas if I just gave you the $60 or whatever, I mean, I don't think you could buy heroin with $60, but
I think you
get the idea.
Yeah.
So you might be able to. I don't know how much heroin costs.
I don't either, but you can get a half of a rock or whatever, and I'm sure they'll figure out how to fill in the gaps they need to.
But yeah, like that's the whole thing, is like you're giving somebody access to something that can better their lives with mm-hmm. a phone bill being paid, whereas with heroin or something like that, you're just hurting them indirectly.
And maybe someday the government will get around to doing an additional tax program to pay people's phone bills, whereas if you have private charities competing with each other, then they have the incentive to figure out right away and get on it that, okay, this is one of the ways that we can help people that doesn't get abused.
Hey, thanks for the call tonight, Shortwave Surfer. I appreciate the call. Let's continue here. We have Bad Slave on the line in New Hampshire. Bad Slave, go ahead.
Oh, thank you. I wanted to just say that, you know, getting into the whole contraband thing is that, you know, right now, you know, it's been a long time since the USA has been the maximum, you know, abuser of incarceration as the choice of you know, taking people's freedom. And the trick that they have is that basically they've written so many laws, particularly in the federal realm,
mm-hmm.
that have there to, you know.
You mean three felonies a day so that you can have the most filled prison systems in the entire world?
There are a ton of people behind bars who've never harmed another human being. And I happen to know, Bad Slave, that you spent some time in state prison here in New Hampshire for a victimless act of, I think, driving your car. You know, what was your experience behind bars there? What percentage of the people were there that you encountered for actually creating a victim versus those who had no victim?
The best I could, you know, glean from the population I was exposed to is that about half, of the people that are there for...
about half.
Crimes without a harmed party.
Right. Now, this is state prison. You know, there may or may not be more in places like federal prison, depending on the security level, obviously. But now, state prison, was this considered a maximum security facility? I mean, they don't have different levels of security, I don't think, in New Hampshire.
Well, I was in general population for the 15 months that I was there. I had a good cellmate and I think COVID took him out recently. He was only 50 years old
Certainly is important to have somebody that if you're in a cell with people to hopefully have somebody that you can get along with. Do you have any recommendations for the caller who was on the line? I know that may not have been the reason you were calling in, but since you do have some experience, you weren't in federal medium security, but I mean, just generally for somebody who, as he said, may be facing 10 years to life, do you have any advice?
Well, I think you're probably as well suited as anybody to make good time for yourself. I was released on home confinement after the 13 months, and my experience there was not bad.
Yeah, a lot of it with jail and with prison is really just they make it scarier than it actually is.
Yeah. Hey, thank you for the call, Bad Slave. I appreciate the input there. The number here is 603-283-6160. Coming up, we still haven't talked about the senators taking aim at El Salvador and their Bitcoin adoption. I definitely do want to get into that. We'll do that on the way in hour three.
Hi, this is Jason Hansen. I'm a former CIA officer and best-selling author on safety and preparedness. The fact is, things are getting downright scary for everyone who's storing their wealth in the banks. We just saw the collapse of three major banks, and I would urge you to consider protecting your wealth ASAP. If even a tiny percentage of Americans attempt to withdraw their savings, we would see a collapse of the entire banking system, sending us into a modern-day Great Depression. Fortunately, there is a way for you to avoid this. It starts with contacting Advantage Gold. If you have an IRA or 401k, Advantage Gold can help convert those paper assets into physical gold and silver. This is the process that I recommend everybody use as a hedge against rapid inflation and to protect your retirement wealth from the banks. Take control of your financial safety today. Call 800-900-8000 to get your free gold investment kit from Advantage Gold. Call 800-900-8000. That's 800-900-8000.
Advantage Gold is not an investment advisor or a tax advisor. Consult with your financial advisor before investing.
Call 800-900-8000.
Who listens to radio at night? EMTs, truck drivers, law enforcement, and many other hardworking people just like you, buying products and services from companies just like yours. Many companies owe their success to radio. It's the engaging medium. Call 877-996-4327 or email advertise@gcnlive.com. That's advertise@gcnlive.com.
Has your body ever gone low blood sugar, feeling weak, shaky, knowing you better eat something fast? We all know high blood sugar can lead to many metabolic problems. At GCNteam.com, we have a healthy blood sugar pack, focusing on the structure and function of stable blood sugar. Find us at GCNteam.com or call 877-878-4203. Nothing feels worse than unstable blood sugar. Call 877-878-4203. That's 877-878-4203.